Accession number 28756, Reel 2.
Well, we were handed out when the intake, we were told we'd been accepted into the airborne. We were all lined up and we'd all handed out our red berry. And that was quite an achievement, to get your red berry. It was something that everybody wanted to do, you know, and I can't tell you, but it was really great, you know. That was that. You got your berry. But we was training glider pilots most of the time on landing and takeoff.
So you'd go out to an aerodrome near Bradford, yeah, every day,
Netheravon or somewhere like that near Andy,
and you'd be
loaded up, and take off, and you'd land.
The process of loading the glider. You must have been taught that. How was that?
Well, you just there was a door opened on the side of the glider. You got in and you sat down either side of the glider. And when you took off, you...
You'd be in the Hotspur or in the big
ones? No, in the big ones. You'd lie to the side. The other, in the Hotspur glider, you sat in one line in the middle. But in the Hawser, you had two lines down, one down either side. And, I liked it. Although the paratroopers would never go in them. They said, no, going up in a bloody aircraft that's got no propeller. They wouldn't have none of that. My mate who lives in Glumpton, he says, you must be bloody crazy, you blokes. But we enjoyed it, Jenna, we enjoyed it.
So every day you're going out, you're getting into the glider. The glider is towed off.
Yeah.
How does it? What was it towed by? Can you remember what aircraft?
Well, sometimes it was a Dakota, or you might have a four-engine towing it off, like a Lancaster bomber or something like that. But they were mainly Dakotas during training.
And you go up and do a turn of the airport.
You go to and they go up, take you around, then you cast off, and you come in and land again. And then they hook up again, and then you take off, and you go, and you land again.
I mean, didn't you feel a bit like sort of cannon fodder being trained?
Well, you know,
there's
a
lot of faith that you've got to have in your pilot.
You had to have faith in the pilot, and they were pretty good. They were pretty good, these glider pilots. It was great fun, really. I used to enjoy it because you were doing no margin or doing nothing else. You were just going sitting in a plane taking off, training glider pilots, live loading, as they called it. And there was one particular thing that I didn't think much of, and that was they used to do with a Hotspur glider. They used to put two poles up and put the tow rope between the poles, and the aircraft used to come in and pick it up with a hook and snatch it off the ground. And that was I never went on that, but that was something that did happen, that they was preparing for recovering gliders, which never happened, because when you see some pictures of some of the gliders that landed, they smashed up pretty badly. Especially not during training, but in actual action, they were smashed up very badly. You know.
So, did you see this happen, of Hotspurs being snatched off by?
Yes, I saw that happening. Yes, several times. Yeah.
Did that work? It sounds very.
Oh, it worked all right. You know, it was okay. Will you excuse me a minute? I must go to the loo.
Not a problem. Not a problem. Just let me unclip you. That's okay. And so, you're doing this training glider pilots.
Yeah.
And were there any accidents at that time?
Yes, there were several accidents. There was one or two people were killed during training, of course. But it was just one of those things. We knew that it was going to happen anyway.
What happened exactly? What plane?
Well,
gliders crashed.
Yeah, glider crashed, and And of course, being made of what they were made of, you can imagine what happens when they crash. Nobody would survive in one if they crashed up badly. One time there was one went into a woods. There was some copses up at Netheravon and landing there, and it went straight into the wood. The weeds came off, and bit of a mess there, you know. But that's just not many accidents. Now and again, there was an occasional one, but not many.
And I suppose when you're up and you're being towed by the aircraft, and then the release goes, there's sudden silence. I imagine all you hear.
There is no noise at all, none whatsoever. This is the reason they use these gliders, because they were so silent on approach. Nobody heard them coming in. The only thing you heard was the wind passing by the wings. They were so silent coming in. And of course, they land at between 90 and 100 miles an hour. And when they come down, first of all, not on the training, because they used to bring them in slowly on the wheels. They didn't want to damage them. But when we went into action, of course, and you landed, you came down at such a speed on rough ground, not like where we were landing in training, that the first thing that happened when you hit the ground was that you lost your wheels. They broke off. And you landed on a metal skid underneath. And they shot along on a metal skid. And on average, they would land between 80 and 100 miles an hour. And when they'd slowed down enough, they'd let the drag chute go out the back. They couldn't put it on too quickly, but otherwise it'll tip him up. But, that was that.
So you were then training at Bulford for how long?
We were training with these pilots for, I was about 3 months, I think, 2 or 3 months.
So now we're into the beginning of, with 42, we're sort of coming up to sort of spring 42, yeah. I imagine.
Well, then we were under the command of a Major Howard. It was D Company, was in command. I was in D Company. And we lived in the spider block, which was a wooden block away from the battalion. And we were told, called together and told by Major Howard that we were going to do specific specialist training. We didn't know what for. We were never told. And we'd done this specialist training. It was very hard. It was constant, perhaps going over the assault course in the morning, then doing a march in the afternoon. We'd to run every morning 5 miles before breakfast, as I told you, in boots and shorts. And we'd done all this specialist training. And then at night, we started, he said, now we're going to turn day into night. And from then on, for about 4 weeks, we'd done nothing during the day, but we slept. At night time, we'd done the activities that we would normally do during the day, until we were able to operate both day and night equally as efficiently. And this went on for several months. This training went on for several months, and we were getting very, very efficient.
When you say you could operate it, then from what point of view? That you could operate in the dark?
Yes.
You could put your kit on, you could get going.
We could do everything in the dark.
Load the gliders even?
Oh, yes. Load them in the dark, yeah.
Did you do any night flights in the gliders?
Yes, we've done one or two night flights.
How did you find that?
Oh, not too bad. Bit scary at times, but there we are, we're all together. And it was pretty good. I loved the life. I loved it. The comradeship was great, fantastic. And then,
but before, did you go off camp at all? Were you allowed out to go out to?
Oh yes, we could go home and leave, weekend leave and stuff like that. And we had several weekend leaves, and you had an ordinary leave. But we still didn't know what we were going to do. Nobody was told anything at all. And then one day he called us all together and he said, "We're going down to Exeter," he said. "There's two bridges down there and we're going to train on those two bridges, attacking and capture." Still no indication of where or what we were doing it for.
This is the summer of 42.
43.
43.
Yeah, because we went into action in
44,
wasn't it? Yeah.
I'm sorry, I just think we missed out. You joined up late 41.
Yeah.
You volunteered for this special airborne squadron in the early 42. You trained.
Went right the way through.
The summer of 42. Yeah. So that training then went on.
And on and on and on. Constantly training.
When did you come down to Exeter then?
Dates elude me.
Well, that's okay. I
mean, I'm sorry about that. I can't remember.
But it presumably would have been...
It must have been nearer the time of the actual takeoff going down.
But that would have been in 44, June.
Yeah,
44.
Something like that, yeah.
Does that mean that you could have trained for 2 years? Surely not.
I did.
You didn't leave the country?
No.
From?
No.
When you came back from Northern Ireland?
No. I was in all the time and trained hard. We had several trips out different places to do different things. For instance, we went down to Ilfracombe, and we'd done cliff scaling down at Ilfracombe. 2 months we had down there, training on cliffs, day and night climbing cliffs. And when we left Ilfracombe to come back, prior to us being down there, there was a guards battalion down there. And they said they were going to march back to their barracks. Well, they started out. And after the first day, they had the TCVs come out and pick them up and take them back. Well, we went down there after them. The whole battalion was down there cliff scaling. And then we were told that we were going to march back to Bulford Camp on the Salisbury Plains, which was 143 mile. And we were going to be in full kit and towing the hand carts that we took in action, which carried all our ammunition. We used to pull them with toggle ropes. And we marched back from Ilfracombe to Bulford Camp. The first 2 days, we marched during the day. But it was in the height of the summer, and it was so hot that we had strips of plaster around the inside of our crutches when we got so raw. Then we changed into KD, and the next 2 days we marched at night. And we marched 143 mile from Ilfracombe to Bulford Camp in 4.5 days. And when we reached the top of the hill at Bulford, the regimental band was waiting for us, and they marched us into Bulford onto the square at regimental pace. And Sweeney had a blister the size of his hand all over, with his walking stick. Major Howard constantly went back to all his platoons to make sure they were all right. And in the battalion, we lost 2 dead on the march. 2 died. 2 collapsed and died. But we done it. And that's something the Guards Battalion couldn't do.
Extraordinary, my God. But they just died from exhaustion. These guys, good Lord. If we go to, say, I want to talk about the this whole period, I had no idea this period of training was so intense and so long.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the training that you did for the two bridges and then go on to the cliff scaling, because that sounds interesting too. The two bridges was first, was it?
No. We'd done the cliffs first.
Oh, well, let's talk about that then.
So we'd done the cliff scaling.
What were you taught to do and how were you taught to do it?
Well, they just went down there and down at Ilfracombe. The one thing about it sticks in my mind particularly was every morning before breakfast again, it was forming. We was in hotels, commandeered hotels, and each platoon or in the battalion, we used to have to form in outside the hotel in boots and shorts. Then we'd run down to the front and jump over the seawall, tied in or tied out. We'd have to jump over the seawall into the sand on the other side. And then we'd run all the way, and it's a steep hill at Ilfracombe, we'd run all the way back up the hill until we have our breakfast. And this was every morning, it was regular. But we used to laugh about it, really. It was a great crowd of fellas. And, I wasn't the size I am now, I tell you. I was 11 stone 4 pounds in those days. And
and the officers too were fit?
Oh, yes. They had to do everything. That was one thing about our lot. D Company I'm talking about. Don't know about the rest of the battalion at all, because we never trained with a battalion. At any time, we always trained with Major Howard. He had the sole control of D Company. And every one of the officers in my company would not ask a man, in particular Major Howard, to do anything that he could not do himself. He always led from the front, always. And he was a man whose character and his... he had an obsession with training that you'd follow him anywhere. You knew that he was he would never let you down, you know. And he was a wonderful man, wonderful man.
Regular soldier?
He was in the police during the war, first off. And he left the police and joined the forces. But I don't think he was a regular. Colonel Sweeney, Lieutenant Sweeney, because he's a colonel. After the war, he soldiered on, he became a colonel. He was a monk. And he left the monastery. And he joined the battalion. So, even in those days, some peculiar people joined the lot what we were in. But he again was a wonderful man, you know, Lieutenant Sweeney. I call him that.
You knew that he was a monk?
Oh, yes, we knew. We knew the word got round that he was a monk.
Did anyone wind him up about that?
No. But they were the same as us.
But there was discipline. You would never be on
No. There was proper discipline. But at the same time, they were no different to us. We were all treated the same, every one of us. And Major Howard would never any other way. I mean, this, just for instance, when we marched back from Ilfracombe, and we marched onto the square, we were the first company in. D Company was the first company in. And when we formed up in the square, none of his officers were allowed to go off duty until every one of his men were bedded down, had their feet inspected, and they'd arranged food for them. Then they could go off duty, not before. And that's how it was with us. So, although they were officers, we were still, because we were doing what we were doing, and we relied on each other so much, although there was discipline, but we still was on a friendly basis. You know.
Presumably Howard knew what you were being trained for.
Well, Howard didn't know himself at the time. When we didn't know. But then he was taken up. I think he went up to some big briefing. And then he knew then.
But that would have been much, much closer.
Yes.
That would have been.
But he didn't. He still didn't inform anybody. And I don't think even any of the officers knew. It was so secretive. I think he knew what we were going to do when we went to Exeter. I'm sure of it. Because I tell you for why. while we were in it, when we finished doing our training down at Exeter on the bridges, they paid us out. They give us our pay, which was a silly thing to do, because we were all given the night's leave in Exeter. And of course, we'd been training, and we had our money, didn't we? So we was into Exeter, and we was in the pubs, and we was getting drunk and what have you. And then some fights started with some Americans down there, and it was a right brawl. And Major Howard came in, and he had to get the chief of police to get some of his blokes to go round and round us all up and put us in our TGVs and take us back. But none of us were charged with anything. He's just pleased to get us back up. Oh, my boys. He used to call us his scallywags. He was the most wonderful man. He was a disciplinarian. He was a very, very strong disciplinarian. But he was a fair man. And as I say, we loved him. We loved him.
Say, for example, you're on a training exercise, but you say he was a disciplinarian. Would you be, you know, everything would have to be right? Your kit would have to be...
Oh, yeah.
There were inspections.
No. Everything's got to be right, you know. And you had to do it. And, you know, he expected you to do it. And, but we were so... By this time... We were so well trained that I don't think it's amiss to say that we must have been one of the finest units in the British Army who could do anything and carry it forward and get to the end of it. We were so highly trained and so proficient that every man could do the other man's job. We were all trained up like that. So if the sergeant got killed, somebody could take over. If the officer got killed, somebody could take over. We were all that way, trained up so much that we all knew everybody else's job and we could do it. But we must have been the finest and fittest and the most well-trained unit in the British Army.
Well, after probably two years of training, it was extraordinary.
We were.
Let's go through. I want to be more specific about the cliff training, and then and then we'll go on to the two bridges. So, what? How were you trained, and what kind of terrain was it that you were trained on?
Well, I don't know if you've been down to Wilfrecombe. They got several different types of cliff down there. Well, they used to drive a stake in at the top. They'd drive a stake into the top of the cliff and throw a rope over, and you'd be down in the bottom, and then you'd have to go up the cliff, and I think there was some of them 80 foot, 90 foot high, and hand over hand, you'd have to pull yourself up the cliff. You'd do that during the day, and then eventually we did it at night cliff climbing.
With full kit?
Yes, you had your kit on, as though you were going into action, you had to pull yourself up. But I mean, we were so fit, it didn't make a difference to us anyway. But one particular incident that happened while we were down there is that we were all on the beach waiting our turn to go up. And one fellow went up and he slipped and he fell. And he came down and landed in the rocks. And he was badly injured. And the sergeant who was in charge of the cliffs coming there, unbeknown to somebody else, sent somebody up to the top to undo the rope and throw it down because he thought it was too dangerous a part of cliff to try. Was one of the blokes that was there in the group, the sergeant must have gone off or something. He said, oh, I'm sure I can do that, and he starts to go. He's got up about 20 feet and a rope come over the top, because they'd undone it, and the sergeant thought, and it came out. And the funniest thing was, is this bloke had seen to pass the rope through his hands before he suddenly dropped. But he was lucky. He fell on the sand in between. And he did just fractured his ankle. But it was like an old film. But we done that all weathers, wet or dry, we used to do it.
Day and night.
Yeah, day and night.
For 2 months.
For a couple of months down there, yeah.
And, I mean, I've seen films of this, but were you trained in the use of mortars that would fire grapnels up, or...?
Yeah, grapnel, just like a gun, really, and used to put a little rocket thing in it with a grappling hook on the top and fire it up at the top of the cliff and hook it in. I must admit that I never went up on one of those ropes myself, because we were just doing it on the main ropes, you know. But, we were trained in to shoot these grapnels up. Yeah.
And what happened when you got to the top of the cliff? What were you meant to do then? Deploy?
Well, it was just practice. That's all it was, you know, practice. You went back down again and you'd done it again, you know, but about two or three times during the course of a day. But, it was just practice cliff climbing. I mean, in our position, we knew we'd never bloody well climb any cliffs. Because that wasn't what we were there for, you know. We were to be taken into action in gliders, because that was one means of getting a whole platoon of men into one spot at one time, unlike paratroopers who were spread over an area. I mean, when a stick comes out of a plane, it spreads. But you were all in one group, out, ready to fight. They had to reorganise and get together again. So it was a much quicker and silenter way of getting people into action.
I'll just do this. Doug Allen, Reel 3. So if we go...